This is the first episode of Matt Hopper Productions. We're just here for the beer.
Yeah.
We're not taking it too seriously.
No, as beer should never be taken too seriously. But let me...
What are you drinking there, Drew?
I'm starting off with a Nod Hill Square Wave. Haven't had this yet. It is an IPA. It's dry hopped with a couple beauties there. Citra, Simcoe, and Huel Melon. And I'm going to take a sip.
Nice.
Oh, it's terrible. No, it's actually really good. It's really good. So what are we doing here?
This is the intro
to a
new podcast.
Yeah, we're going to talk about what's coming down the road, what our thoughts are, and what we're going to have in store to listen to for all you beautiful people out there.
Yeah, so I guess we should probably tell them who we are. So Brenner LeCompte, the founder of Mad Hopper. And
his trusty sidekick, Drew. My name is Drew, but I do not have a last name currently. So that's the mystery of the podcast.
I like it. Drew knows more about beer than anyone I know, so he definitely has to be on this podcast.
But we're going to taste some beers. We're going to talk some shit. We're going to have a good time.
So what are we going to do over these next several podcasts? So if people are coming along, they discovered us and they want to know, what are we going to be talking about? What do we plan to do here?
Well, I consider the three states that I like to get beer from primarily to be, well, maybe four: New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Vermont. Mm. And mostly location based, but us being in Connecticut here, I think we're going to introduce a lot of this world to what we have access to. Nod Hill that I'm drinking right now, right here in Ridgefield, Connecticut. Delicious beer and really cool atmosphere. Have you been down there yet?
Yes. I've actually hung out quite a few times.
Yeah, they're doing a food truck thing. They're real small.
They put a new canopy up. Actually, yeah. Today was unseasonably warm. So I walked in there, it was actually hot. People were like sweating. Yeah. Like 53 today. But no, cool atmosphere there. Anytime anyone comes to town, my brother came into town a few weeks ago. We went and we hung out there. I'm definitely taking anyone that comes to Ridgefield to visit me, I'm taking them to Nod Hill. Yeah, I think it's a really cool environment.
It's definitely following the mold of the good old school brew pub. It's got the live music one night a week.
Yeah.
It's got different food trucks most nights of the week. It's got the classic hours of a brewery, which is, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
They is might that a be typical open, brewery thing?
They might be open.
Because it kind of sucks that they're not open that late. Like, we tried to hang out a few times and they're like closed at 9.
The big thing about them is what a lot of people don't realize that are chasing. It's good, right?
It's so Nod Hill. I feel like all of their beer, like, what is that? So a brewery.
It's refreshing.
You know, like when you hear a piece of music and you have different sets within the music, but there's a tone or there's something that goes through all different
consistency.
Sets. There's a consistency that goes through it. Is that the same for all breweries? Because I definitely find that with Nod, that if I'm drinking a single, I'm drinking a double, I'm drinking a porter. I picked up their Pipe and Slippers the other day.
Great beer.
Oh, dude, it's awesome.
Great beer.
I don't... That's a porter, right? So
their Pipe and Slippers is... It might be a stout. I think it's a porter.
Is it a porter?
Because their Terrain is a porter as well.
Yeah.
I think they're big on the porter brew versus the stout brew.
Yeah.
I think it's great about that beer is it's a full-bodied beer, but it's not super high alcohol. Mm-hmm. Doesn't fill you up like it's dinner.
No.
But one of the things, what you're saying and what I completely, what I see and why I think it happens is we've never really had a brewery like Nod Hill in this area.
Yeah.
You have other breweries around. They're good.
Yeah.
But when you're up more in the Northeast in these Vermonts and these Vermont bars and breweries and these Massachusetts breweries, you run into that consistency regularly because you're drinking beer that's so fresh.
Yeah.
So we're drinking this beer here, Square Wave. They don't have the date printed on the can, but I'm fairly certain this was canned within the last week.
Yeah, it was on their Instagram account.
Exactly.
And
so
that they were canned.
You know, people old school will joke about how beer will last forever. And yeah, the Miller Lights and the High Life, which I love, will last forever.
Yeah.
But they're not made with these micro ingredients. They're made with these mass producing ingredients.
Yeah.
So the consistency that you're tasting from this is just like the consistency that you're going to taste if you go up to Trillium or if you go to, Alchemist or any of these big boy breweries. Because And it goes right along with what you said before. How come their hours are the way they are? Their hours are the way they are is because they have to be closed those couple days to make the beer that they're going to then serve that week.
Yeah.
That's, there's no, they're not brewing in a surplus fashion.
Yeah.
You know, there's a big whole umbrella to the craft beer movement that part of what drove it was the brewing in deficit on purpose to then create a crazy market.
Yeah.
And they've done that. They've done that to the point where there's, you know, morons taking a vacation day to go get beer and waiting 4 hours.
My brother-in-law drove all the way up. I don't even know which brewery he went to.
Treehouse.
I don't think it was Treehouse. No, where did he? I can't remember where he went. And I'll give him a shout out. He drove all the way up there and literally whatever beer he was going to get stood in line. Actually, there was no line. So he got up there. But the guy in front of him literally took the last case of beer. So he was just like turned around and drove all the way back. It was like an hour drive. But no, I think like we have such an opportunity here living in what I can kind of consider the mecca of what's exploding in the New England kind of style IPAs and craft brew scene. We have an awesome front row seat from what I can tell to taste some amazing beer. You know, we just ran through a list of breweries that we want to kind of do a behind the scenes look at over the next, let's say, 10 or 15 episodes. But, I mean, we rattled off, like, within several minutes, 10 or 15
yeah.
just awesome, awesome breweries that are within driving distance from our house.
Connecticut is becoming a true powerhouse.
Mm.
If you looked at the craft beer world 15 years ago, it existed in Colorado.
Really?
Colorado was before the New England style came out. That didn't exist back then. It was a much more, not harsh, but resiny and full piney beer. That's what IPA was.
Yeah.
And you still get some breweries like New England Brewing that's making Gandhi Bot. That's almost like an homage as far as I'm concerned.
So I'll be honest, I hate those beer. Now, what is it about that I don't like?
So,
it's super. ABU, ABV? What is the.
There's no quote unquote juiciness.
Oh, yeah.
So
are we all just a bunch of pussies that like to drink orange juice with our beer?
Well, what happened is the IPA market was once that market that. You know, you envisioned the Marlboro Man drinking because it was like
that. The IPA market.
Yeah, the IPA market. It was a big beer. So, you know, when I started drinking IPAs, I was drinking beers like Avery and Titan IPA and Great Divide.
These are names of beers?
These are Colorado breweries.
Brewers, got it.
You know, and Racer 5 from San Diego.
Yeah, like I'm trying to think, like even like 6 or 7 years ago, what IPAs would we have been drinking?
Locally on this side of the country,
yeah,
the ones that were around that are currently still around, the Lawson's and the Alchemist, were so small that
yeah,
we're on that. The Hill Farmsteads,
yeah,
they were on a level of brewing that was, we're brewing for our own people.
And yeah, the majority, you can't get distribution.
And the majority, well, the majority of them are against distribution.
Why is that? Why is that?
Because as poetic and not financially driven as it sounds, they're not brewing it for the money.
Yeah.
These are a lot of, you know, guys that started brewing beer because they enjoyed brewing beers. And they got to the point where they were popular enough that they then had to cut down production to stay within certain limits so they weren't required by law to use distribution.
Yeah.
That's how it worked. But
so you know, there's a legal factor here that forced some of these breweries.
Yeah, and there's
if you produce a certain amount,
you have to use distribution. But then, you know, nepotism goes with that because you look at the Brewers Guild and a couple of the chairs on the Brewers Guild are the head of Sam Adams and the head of Dogfish.
Yeah.
And Sam Adams and Dogfish have satellite breweries all over the country.
Now, they're considered craft breweries too, right?
Sam Adams is the Budweiser of
craft
beer.
Right.
However, if you can only brew 850,000 barrels in production a year, and you have to stay below that to stay away from distribution, aside from self-distribution.
Right.
Then they're brewing 800.
Meaning that you put it in a truck or a van.
You own
and drive
the truck,
it down
you
to
own
the,
everything.
Yeah.
So you'll see Sam trucks driving around, you know, but as far as distribution goes, there's guidelines that they can stay in control of to then limit their exposure and still be able to attach the word craft
to
the front of their
that's
beer.
What everyone wants to do.
But the whole concept of juicy is in the last 5 to 7 years.
Yeah.
And that didn't exist.
And now you got like Too Juicy, you got Grapefruit, like all these names are coming out and everything's Julius,
you know,
right?
And you get these beers that when you pour them, they look more like a mimosa than they do a beer. That didn't exist. I mean, IPAs 15 years ago were crystal clear, they were more amber colored, you knew you were drinking a beer.
Yeah.
So to get into the whole beer game on that level and grow an appreciation for it, you know, my mom used to break my chops because she'd say, "You're talking about beer like it's wine." and really, when it comes down to it, you know, what did we have before? We had It's Complicated Being a Wizard by Burlington Beer Company.
Which was delicious.
Kind of what we started with here before we drank this. It's a lot higher alcohol here than the Square Wave, but...
Yeah, so what is this? Being a Wizard is an 8%.
It's a double. ABV. This is a single. Yeah. So, but they've found a way to take these higher alcohol beers.
So smooth. This was one of the smoothest doubles I've ever had.
The reason it was smooth is because they're pairing hops of specific flavor with that bite that you're getting in the alcohol.
That's where the chemist in you comes out talking about the balance.
Yes. Yeah. I have a degree in communications, but I can talk my way out of a lot.
Right.
But either way, what are we doing here? We're going to taste some beers. We're going to talk about the beers we taste. We're going to introduce you guys, I think, to...
A lot of New England.
A lot of the beers we have access to.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting to talk about the idea that in this world of people chasing these very sought-after heady toppers and...
The unicorns?
You know, the unicorns of beer, if you will, that they're ignoring a lot of what's on the shelf that is still really good beer.
Yeah.
And through my experience, you're starting to see a lot of people that will forego the pilgrimage and camping out at a brewery the night before... To then go down to the Nod Hill or the Reading Beer Company or the Bad Sons and sit down and have a pint or two.
Yeah. Well, one thing you taught me, and this is something I learned through just hanging out with you, is that beer is meant to be shared. Like, just like, you know, sitting alone, drinking a ton of beer, that's not what it's all about, right? No. Like, getting a beer, getting a 4-pack, getting a bottle, and sitting down and sharing it with good company, just really, it brings a beer to life.
I'd be curious, especially if anybody out there wants to argue this, I'd listen to it all day long, but if you can explain to me why Founders put CBS and KBS last year in a 22-ounce bottle. It's a 14% stout.
Yeah.
They put it in a big bottle because they want you to share it with a couple people.
Yeah. It's not
they want people to sit around. They're reminding you back into a growler, 64 ounces, so it could be shared. No one's going home and drinking 4 pints out of a growler by themselves. And if they are, I'm sure there's people that will and people that do. But the intention, as far as I'm concerned, is it is a communal, is a social, it is a conversation builder. It's a community builder.
Yeah.
And that's what beer is all about to me.
Yeah.
Even still. And don't get me wrong. I'll drink a couple beers by myself playing some Xbox.
Yeah.
But my most favorite beers are actually getting a couple really good ones and even splitting them.
Yeah.
You know, I had a buddy who came in this weekend, brought those Trilliums that we have. And every beer he brought, he might have brought 9 different ones.
Yeah.
We split, you know, 6 of them.
There's so much fun in doing that. You know, over over Christmas, hanging out with my brother-in-laws, and we did the same thing. You know, my brother-in-law brought some, and I'm forgetting the brewery. I have to bring it back, but it was up in Rhode Island, and it was a delicious beer he brought back, and we split that, and we split a few other things, and, like, that's just fun, because you can share, you can talk about, hey, what do you think, how does it taste, etc., and, you know, you're not sitting back throwing down 3 8% beers and just ended up on the couch.
Yeah.
So it's fun. I enjoy it.
It's definitely a more enjoyable experience, and And I like the aspect of, I mean, I like tasting foods. I mean, clearly, yeah. If these wonderful people listening could see me, they wouldn't argue that. however, I feel the same way about beer. I think it's great. I love setting up a flight.
Yeah.
And I love doing it in an order where you can have this one, and maybe you work your way up in alcohol, or maybe you work your way through style.
Yeah.
And you kind of finish off. It goes right along with pairing.
Yeah.
You truly can pair beer with food as well as you can do with wine.
Yeah.
I think that this podcast is gonna intrigue people in the conversation of discovering new beers, talking about the trends that are out there.
Yeah.
Sharing personal stories.
Yeah, I think I've just enjoyed so much learning about, you know, what's new, what's trending in the market. Drew, obviously, you have your ear to the ground and you bring these things to my attention, and I love it because, you know, I'm someone that's busy, 3 kids, working all the time, but I really enjoy sitting, talking about these things, tasting these great beers. So I think we're going to talk a little bit about those trends that are coming up. I love hearing about the stories. So recently, my family and I went up to Kent Fall Brewery. It was a great day just hanging out. You know, I'm a sucker for nostalgia, so walking around the farm, seeing the animals, getting the tour, hearing the stories about how Kent Falls came about. Being in the woods with a beard. It was awesome. Got lost, no cell service, right? We're trying to text people. There's no cell
service. Dirt roads.
There is a waterfall in Kent Falls, yes, right? We found that.
It is the Kent Falls.
And which was funny because the Kent Falls logo is a waterfall, but I didn't really know that.
A little slow in the uptake.
I'm a little slow. Yeah.
I had a financial mind. slower common sense.
So when we drove up, we actually got lost, and then we found the waterfalls, and I was like, what do you know? That looks just like the Kent Fall logo. So there you go. A little slow, but it was an awesome experience. And we want to share some of those stories about the breweries and the people behind those breweries and how they came to life and what they're producing. Because, you know, in my opinion, they're really artists too, coming out with these beers and these flavors.
It is a craft.
Yeah.
They're no different than a chef.
Right.
They're just using that skill in a different way because, you know, one of the things you realize when you get into beer is the thought and the combinations of flavor and the timing of different additions and whatnot that have happened. I mean, talking about stories, one of my favorite stories, and again, this is one of the many, is, and it's family related, just like yours, up in Vermont this summer, in Woodstock with my brother-in-law, hey, let's go up to Burlington tomorrow. We'll take the boys, take the two boys up. I got my brother-in-law, myself, my two boys sitting at Foam,
yeah,
right on the lake, looking at New York across the lake, and they're drinking root beer on tap in beer snifters.
Yeah, nice.
And I'm drinking, you know, Foam beer that's hours old.
Yeah.
And, you know, I get two boys. The other thing I like about it, I'm not going to lie, I feel like there's a way to drink beer. Beer drinking today is different than beer drinking when I was younger.
Yeah.
Right? Like, when I looked at beer when I was younger, it was dad and his friends drinking some High Life.
Yeah.
And, you know, on 4th of July, a couple hot dogs in, you know, some watermelon and things getting a little rowdy. I now see beer drinking as, you know, my two boys are going to look up and go, so this is how you drink it. Like, it's almost got that double, you know, the double-sided meaning where it's like, I'm drinking it because I enjoy it. I'm not drinking it to drink beers.
Right.
Like, there's a different...
There's an appreciation.
Yes. It's not just, I'm going to drink to get drunk.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to drink because I want to have a good time. It's like, I want to drink because I'm curious.
Yeah.
I want to, you know, do I want a full pint? No. I want a flight.
Yeah.
I want to try all this stuff because I want to see how you made each of these. And you know what? I'm sitting at the bar and looking behind me, and right behind me is the guy making the beer.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm looking at the decanters, and I'm looking at the oak tanks that they're aging their stout in for 6 months from now.
Yeah.
Like, you're part of it.
Yeah. It's a story. You're drinking a story.
You're not part of a Budweiser.
There's a history to it, and I think that's why so many people have appreciated wine for so long. You know, I don't know if you've ever done a wine tasting, but, you know, My wife and I went to a wine tasting. This was a few years back, but it was all about Barolos. So it was learning about, you know, the region in northern Italy where Barolos are made and how, you know, these grapevines are grown on the rock. And that's why this wine has a little bit of a, you know, a taste.
Yeah, and the acidity in the soil.
Right, they're talking. Yeah, yeah. And it's about these farmers and what they did and how they have to go up and all these. And it's a story. And when you're drinking, it's a history lesson as well, learning about all of these things. And to a lesser degree, right, we're not, you know, there's not hundreds or thousands of years of history here. But you learn stories about these breweries, right? Who are the people that are brewing them? Why did they brew them? How did they come up with them? I find that just as fascinating as drinking it is learning about the stories behind them.
Yeah, no, totally. The original IPAs that the more Midwestern and Western states were based off of go back years.
Yeah.
You know, in the old days, you have you know, Europeans coming over to this country that had to make beer last.
Yeah.
How'd you make meat last? You coated it in salt.
Yeah.
You oversalted it. No bacteria can grow. How did you make beer last? You overhopped it.
Yeah.
So the roots behind it make it that much more interesting to be like, wow, like I didn't think of that. You know. And then if you've ever brewed beer, which you know I've dabbled in, and I got to the point where it was just like,
you became too obsessive.
I need to either spend $30,000 and turn my basement into a brewery, or I need to throw the towel in. Just cleaning a carboy in my kitchen sink is just not working for me, and my wife's not too happy about it. So it's not hard to make beer. The level that people are taking it to with the beer that we're seeing around here are the people that have not only the foresight and the plan, they have the finances, but they have the drive to push.
Yeah.
Because the limits, you know, I often look at Sam Calagione, who's the head of Dogfish.
Okay.
And he was one of the first guys, at least in my opinion, that you know, when he made Raisin d'Etre, which I knew what that meant in French, but I don't now.
But the reason, you know, for being, right? The essence of something.
So so that beer was an old ale, which is based on the yeast that he used raisins in as opposed to a malt.
Yeah.
And the sweetness from the raisins was the sugar that fed the yeast.
That's interesting.
Or his Noble Rot. That was one of the first beers that you saw Noble Rot, where he used...
Which is a grape, right? That's a
Noble Rot. So it's a white wine musk.
Yeah.
Grape.
That's really interesting.
That he then put into like a Pilsner, or don't quote me on that, but on a lighter colored beer. So now you had this champagne-esque beer that was a little bit higher alcohol. He was one of those first people to me that went out of bounds. You know, he caught his own wild yeast and brewed beer off of wild yeast. You know, he took these worldwide stout that's like 18%.
Yeah.
And he was one of the first breweries that I saw personally that he had a 1,000-gallon wooden oak tank that once a year guys would come in and plane the surface off so you'd have a fresh coat of oak wood.
Have you been to that brewery?
I've been there a couple times.
Yeah, it's awesome. So we go to vacation, as you guys do as well, down to Bethany. Such a cool place. We hung out there. I think it was a rainy day, so we were going to hit the beach. We took the kids out. We got there early in the morning because we figured, you know.
Yeah, I did my tour at like 9:30.
But we didn't even get in. So we showed up there, right? We got the kids. I think we only had two kids at the time. But we showed up there, and we ended up standing in line. We got tickets for like on the wait list. So we'd have to wait until the last tour, which was something around 4.
But they have the bocce outside.
Bocce's outside. The kids played. They had food trucks there. They were obviously serving beer. So we hung out there the whole day. It was awesome. It got to the end. They did the last call. And I don't know if you've ever been on these waiting lists, but they start calling. You know, Smith, family of four. Family of four. And then they move to the next one, right? Johnson, family of six. And we're just like sitting there like, please let us in. Please let us in. Please let us in. They finally got down to us. We got a tour. It was awesome. Just hearing that history. We got to see that oak tank.
How they run the facility.
Oh, it was awesome. Yeah. It was awesome. And that just endears you to the beer, right? Again, hearing those stories, you become you feel like you're part of the family now. So it was awesome.
They were one of the first breweries that I'd ever been to that were a certified gluten-free beer brewery. My wife's gluten-free. She can't really enjoy a lot of the beers that we're probably going to talk about and enjoy. But just seeing the process, it was almost like a, as far as chemicals go in producing an FDA product, the level that they go to.
Yeah.
You know, and the other thing that's cool about that brewery is they're a zero footprint brewery.
Oh, interesting.
So all of their spent grains, all of their spent grains that they're using in making the beer get recycled to go to the farms to feed their cattle that then go to the steaks and the burgers that they serve in the restaurant.
Yeah.
All their water goes to an in-house filtration system to then cool and heat the jackets that heat up the beer. Like, they've really thought through everything. And that was definitely my first time down there. I nerded out. I bought my tickets.
I bet you
from
did.
From Connecticut.
You're such a fucking nerd.
Yeah. Hey, you know what, though? I wasn't sitting there waiting for the game to be called.
Chasing your kids. Or being chased by your kids.
No, it was pre-kids. I was smart. I went down there pre-kids. But I got on a 9:30 a.m. tour, and I got to tell you, I wasn't driving home by 11 a.m., and I couldn't be happier.
You were like the next Walter White. You wanted to go start cooking stuff in your basement. That's so cool. The one that kind of kicks off, I actually lived right down the road from Captain Lawrence in Pleasantville for a short while before they moved their brewery. So that was probably the first one. And then the second one was Sam Adams. So
super underrated brewery is Captain Lawrence. And I was there for a fundraiser.
Which I have not been to. How was it?
A new facility, and
so they did a fundraiser in the brewery.
Yeah, we have friends that held a fund. They actually held they hold a yearly fundraiser there, and they take the actual brew house, which is right outside of the pub tasting room, which they've made the pub tasting room almost. It has a bar that when I walked into it, I felt like I just got off the 18th hole.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like a bar that should be playing the Masters on the TV, you know?
Yeah.
And you have nothing but glass doors that look onto the brewery floor. And for the fundraiser, they just cleared the brewery floor. And you have all your tanks and whatnot, but in the shipping receiving section, if you will.
Okay.
Where they can move pallets and whatnot. They had everything there.
How many people did they fit?
I think the fundraiser had a couple hundred easy.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, so this is a massive place.
Yeah, it's a much bigger facility
than what
we
had in Pleasantville.
Yeah. And they're a brewery that, like, the people there are awesome. They, at this fundraiser, I'll give you an example. This fundraiser, they were serving beer that wasn't Captain Lawrence as well, just because it's like the more the merrier with what we're doing. They're very
cool.
They're very community-driven brewery. The owner, I believe, is out of Katona. So he's a local guy.
Yes.
And the place is just great. And it's underrated. They're putting beers out like Powdered Dreams.
Yeah.
Powdered Dreams.
I haven't tried that one.
Well, the beauty of Powdered Dreams is it is an ever going IPA. So
what the hell does that mean?
So they do it with different hops. So your label's
going to
change.
So you're never going to have the same beer?
For each batch or run they do.
It could
do,
be different?
It is different.
So that could be a little frustrating too, right? Because you could hit a batch that you really like.
Which again then follows the model of Night Shift in Massachusetts, where they have
a beer. What is that?
It's Morph. Morph is a... Night Shift is a brewery.
Okay.
And Morph was one of their beers that they put out that they almost... As far as I'm aware, they took like the sour mash style of making whiskey, and each batch of Morph, they would leave a little bit of the beer behind that would go into the next batch.
So give it a different
flavor. So it's
flavor.
Almost like every beer was connected a little bit.
Yeah.
But it was ever changing. So yeah, you'd have batches that were great, and you'd have you never had a bad batch.
Yeah.
You just had a different batch. So the Powder Dreams, you know, it's in that same kind of... Oh, I didn't get this batch. Let's try the next one.
Yeah.
And what does that do? Let's look at it now from the brewery standpoint and from money making.
Yeah.
That creates demand.
Yeah.
Because you have a buddy.
That's a different batch. Like, you really like it. I want to try the next one.
You have
one.
A buddy that says, hey, dude, I got this batch of Powdered Dreams. You got to get it before there's no more.
Yeah.
So now you're racing to the store. You're spending, what, 15, 20 bucks a four pack. Mm. And they're flying off the shelf.
We definitely need to do a podcast on the finances of breweries, because I think
that
that's
could be a whole nother.
Yeah, just getting into how they make money and the distribution and startup costs, because I'm sure we'll have people that are interested in starting their own breweries. So it'd be funny to kind of dive into that and see what that looks like.
Yeah, definitely.
That could be a lot of fun too. So what are you? What are some of your top beers right now? What are you drinking? What do you like right now?
I'm paying a lot of attention to Nod Hill. I feel like
I've got hometown bias, right? Because absolutely. It's literally 3 minutes from my house.
Well, that's part of the problem.
So when people say, like, what am I drinking? What do I like? I say Nob Hill. I feel like a total, like, idiot.
And you live, what, a quarter mile
from the brewery. So I feel horrible. But that in Kent Falls, for me, I will say.
So
Kent Falls being there, understanding the whole history of them being a sour brewery.
Well, that's what they're
base. And I don't like sours. Well, which is interesting.
Their base of the majority of their beers is that sour-esque farmhouse style.
Yeah.
If you look at Kent Falls 5 years ago, they weren't doing IPAs. They were doing table beers. They were doing farmhouse ales.
Yeah.
And they all have that kind of...
Yeah,
you know, micro version of a Blue Moon Funk. It's got that lactosey kind of.
I wouldn't have compared it to a Blue Moon. I have to drink a few more to think about it.
Or a Hoegaarden, but where I'm going with that is when you drink a Blue Moon, and I said the micro version of a Blue Moon.
Oh, okay.
So if you drink a Blue Moon, it's got that Belgian funk to it. Okay. And that's really the best way to describe it. Is there's not, you know. What else has funk? Things with probabiotics. Yogurt. Yogurt's delicious, but it's got like a funk.
Yeah.
That's part of the process.
Yeah.
So that same funk is derived from yeast and from probiotics and lactose and you know, acidophilus and shit like that that's well beyond my knowledge. We can get the dietitian upstairs, right, my wife, to guest one time and give you a full education.
Let's wake her
on
up
that.
Right now.
Yeah, right. But their basis was that farmhouse style that had that little funk. And then I have to imagine, just like anybody following the trend of the market, they're going, wow, the world is going to hoppy, juicy IPAs.
Yeah.
You know, they were big in the Brett IPA, Brettomyces, which is a probiotic yeast strain that has that funk to it.
Yeah.
That they were huge with Brett, Coffee Maker, they've got a couple of them that have that funk, and they're not my style. I'll be honest.
Yeah.
I will drink a beer like that. I will appreciate the hell out of it.
Yeah.
But it's not my preference.
Yeah, that's not what you mean to.
Nob Hill is where I'm leaning.
So Nob is what you're liking.
If I'm going to the store, my sure thing beer, if I can't find anything that really tickles my interest, I'll go headway from counterweight all day long.
Yeah, that's a really good
one. And I think that could be... For $9.99 a four pack or $10.99 a four pack,
it could be the best
deal. Boys,
best value.
One of the best value beers you're gonna find on the show.
Yeah, and there's a whole history just behind Counterweight
behind
too.
Counterweight,
brewery, which we have to cover.
That'll be another episode, right?
Yeah, we gotta dig deep into that,
but,
which is awesome.
I mean, Counterweight, Headweight's a great beer. Another fallback that is never, you know, it's consistently a great beer is Sea Hag from New England Brewing. That's just a good beer.
Yeah.
There's nothing about Headway or Sea Hag that is like, oh my god, these are amazing.
Yeah.
But they're just great beers.
Yeah, they're solid beers.
They're solid good beers.
You know, one I find that's getting a lot of distribution around here, you find it relatively all over the place, and I love, is Wrench by Industrial Arts.
Great beer.
I don't know how they're getting such great distribution for such a good beer, but I find that's just a really reliable beer.
They have part ownership by a pretty big food store family. In the area.
Gotcha.
That is a lot of their financial clout, I have to believe, comes with that.
Yeah.
Wrench is a great beer.
Yeah.
My issue with Wrench versus the other two, if I'm talking about a regular go-to, is if you have two or three Wrenches, you're ready to tuck yourself in.
You're ready to go to sleep. That's funny. So
what about you? What are you buying?
Aside from Nod.
You go to the store. Wow, that's my go-to because there's nothing here.
It's really tough, and you kind of made this comment. You make a joke about if you go to a party, and you know they're like, "Hey, you want to have a Bud Light or a, you know, whatever,
or
just the tabletop beer,
or a Heineken,
right? Like,
you're like, I'll have a Diet Coke.
Sierra Nevada. You're just kind of like, you know what? I'll have a Diet Coke, right? And I think that's been affecting me because. And we'll chat about this as well. You know, we're both, you know, we try to be as healthy as possible. We like to exercise. We sometimes you do better than, sometimes we're better than others. But, you know, when I you know, go into Stop and Shop or whatever, and I'm looking at the beer section, there's nothing really that jumps out at me. Maybe at this time of year, again, kind of get nostalgic, maybe I'll go for like a winter lager, a Sam Adams winter lager, something like that.
No, I hear that completely.
You know, I think they have a Cold Snap, which is another good one.
That's their like springtime slash halfway from winter to spring, whatever that time of year is going to be called there.
I might grab that, but I've really been into kind of the phase of, you know, grabbing a 4-pack from Nod, from a Kent Falls, grabbing a wrench or something like that, and drinking those. Those have been kind of my go-tos recently. So I need to pay a little bit more attention. You know, I think there's a lot of great, like you mentioned, there's a lot of great beer that are getting skipped over because we're waiting in line for 2 hours to get a Bright or to go up to Trillium or something like that. So we're missing a lot of great beers that are on the shelf. So I want to pay a little bit more attention to that over the next few months because I think we can find some undiscovered gems in there.
And I mean, I'm guilty of it. I imagine you're guilty of it. And I know plenty of people are. But there's so many, you know, when you get into beer, I feel like you almost self-patrol a little bit too much where you get pigeonholed into that familiarity. I know this is going to be good.
Yeah.
I'm kind of afraid to try that. You know, I find that a lot of the new beers I try are when I go to a bar and it's on tap and I go, can I try a little bit of that? Or can I get a pint of that?
Yeah.
And that way I'm not committing to you know, buying a 4-pack of Tall Boys that I have a couple sips of and I'm like, God, this sucks.
I hate this.
Like, so, you know, I'm guilty of it too because I've ended up finding a lot of beers that I really love by going, you know, I'm going to give this a shot.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm guilty of the Sam Winter thing. You know, I remember fucking 10 years ago, Sam Summer and Sam Winter were, now granted, they were a little bit of a different beer now. And nowadays, they you know, it's like drinking pumpkin pie sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a little bit
oversweetened.
There's too much nutmeg. But, you know, when summer comes around, I always find myself at some point buying a 6-pack of Sam Summer.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's the nostalgia or like...
Brooklyn just, Summer Ale, you know, for me. Yeah. I'm a sucker for Brooklyn Summer Ale.
And it's still a great beer, you know? It's not a bad beer. Right. None of these beers are bad beers, but it's, you know, you almost get sucked into this whole mindset of people going, well, oh, that's Sam. You can't drink that.
Yeah.
You know? I had a friend who always said to me, You know what my favorite beer is? And I'd go, what? And he'd go, the one that's in my hand.
Yeah.
And I'd go, you know, it's kind of like it's that question in golf. What's the most important shot in golf? It's,
right.
Well, the one you're taking.
Right, like, exactly.
You know, so at the end of the day, if, you know, I'm very, very different outlook now where, you know, I'll say it. Sometimes I go, I buy a 4-pack of Wrench.
Yeah.
And I buy a 12-pack of High Life.
Yeah.
Because I want to have one or two good beers. But, I don't care to drink a Snickers bar worth of calories.
Right.
I'm not looking to get canned, but I want to have another beer.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I think what this podcast is about, what we both have, is like a great curiosity about beer, right? We like discovering the history behind it, the stories behind it. We like learning about it. And that's why we're not just the type that'll go and pick up a 6-pack and go home and just like start drinking, right? It's like we want more. We want more.
See, out of our beer. I also think it's not only interesting, but I love the funny aspect of the habits that you see in the marketplace, whether it's, you know, the hipster with the mustache.
Yeah.
We're talking
about that meme. What was that meme that you...
You know, the guy with the
Oregon strength and conditioning coach, right?
The strength and conditioning coach at Oregon who looks like someone that wants to know what IPAs are on tap.
He's got the handlebar mustache.
I love that guy. Yeah. I don't like that guy, but I need that guy.
Right.
Because that guy's fun to talk about.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I want to talk about your brother-in-law who for a long time, the first time I met... 4 years ago or 3 years ago at your wife's birthday party there, was trying to sell me on the concept that Goose Island Honker Ale was the best ale on the market and had no clue what any of these IPAs and double IPAs are. And then you fast forward 6 months and he's telling me the only thing that's worth drinking is Treehouse.
Right, like, exactly.
What are you talking about?
Where did you come from?
That guy is needed.
And he uncovers these, like, he brought the Rhode Island, and I've got to get the name for it, but it was a great beer, right? So he's like, he's on his own journey.
Was it Greysail? Like Captain's Daughter?
No.
Okay.
No. I got to find out. I got to find out what it was.
But like those, that whole idea of the people behind what you see out and about. Yeah. You know, the people at the store that, you know, when you grab that six pack of something that you like a Sea Hag, that's a very readily available beer, and they kind of, they don't scoff at you, but they're like, you didn't get this?
Right.
And it's like, no, I didn't get that. Because you know what, at the end of the day, it's fucking beer.
Yeah.
Like,
well, it's insane at work. I mean, just the people that are trading.
There's a whole trading
too.
Market.
Oh,
yeah.
It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. There's these great articles too. I was reading this article about how, you know, the decline of the dating scene. You know, all of our lady friends are upset now because people aren't meeting up at bars, because instead of going to bars to, you know, to drink Bud Lights and socialize, you're picking up a four pack at Nod Hill and you're going back to
home.
You know, to your home, your friend's basement, and you're drinking and you're hanging out, right? Mm-hmm. That's what you're doing.
Yeah, the game is no longer on at the bar.
No.
The game is on at your house.
Yeah.
And there's six people with $400 worth of beer. And there's a 12 pack in the room.
And we got to talk about that. Mini fridges and, you know, the value on the, yeah, you've got yours right here. My brother-in-law definitely has one, you know.
He confided to me.
He's like, I need to stop. I think I have a problem here.
Yeah, we're going to post it. We have to post a picture.
Yeah, we'll definitely get a picture.
Just because I, in my heyday of.
And your Trillium bag up there.
And that was from this weekend. That's when he brought the Trillium.
That's phenomenal.
But in the heyday of beer, that was fun, right? But it also makes the fridge look good. But if you notice, right on the very top of the fridge, I have a Narragansett sticker.
There you go.
You know, because in the summer, maybe I want a Dell's Shandy. You know, maybe I do. Judge me. I don't give a shit. That's fine.
I love it too. I mean, you have the stickers on the cans. You can pull off.
The creativity that goes behind them. Yeah.
The creativity behind the stickers and the naming is a whole nother thing we need to get into. You know, maybe we can do a podcast in our top 10 favorite names, because there are some phenomenal names out there.
Nod Hill posted on their, I think it was their Instagram, maybe their Facebook, who their artist is.
Oh, really?
So this guy has got his own Instagram feed, obviously, because it doesn't just work for Nod Hill.
Interesting.
But he's a artist. He is contracted from, I believe, don't mark my words, allegedly, but he does all their label art, and you can see his posts on his page of the can work prior to it going on the can.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's cool. Another aspect of the beer business, right?
Yeah.
That's not beer.
Yeah.
So it's almost, you know what I mean? It makes me think of, you know, I'm a big concert goer, and you get a lot of the old school posters for like the Grateful Dead or whatever.
Yeah.
And even nowadays, String Cheese and Fish, when they
have... Oh my gosh, you're talking about String Cheese.
When they have an event, they have posters for each night's show that they've contracted an artist to make those posters.
For each show. That's insane.
Well, now they might have one artist.
Right.
But for each show, he's done different posters. And it's not like a 5-minute thing. It's a detailed...
Yeah.
They're sold on high-quality board that people are framing. Yeah. I mean, so the thought that's going into... Like, how much it makes sense when you look at a 4-pack costing $14, $15, $18.
Yeah.
You're not just factoring the cost of the beer. You're paying someone to make a label that's going to pop. You know, you're putting the effort into the beer alone, but it's just that aspect that people are like, why does it cost that much?
Yeah,
like,
you know, I paid an
artist to license
that. The value chain behind this, right? I mean, there's a whole production that goes into it. Yeah. So there's awesome. I think, you know, we both told ourselves we would not be those people that would go an hour. So I think we're a little over 40 minutes.
Good
in
intro.
Here. This is a good intro. Yeah. We started off by saying we want to do a 5-minute intro. We're now 40 minutes deep. We'd love to hear from you. You know, we know we're just getting started here, but if there are things you want to for us to talk about, to research, if you've got questions, you can hit us up at themadhopper@gmail.com. That's themadhopper with 2 D's. So themadhopper@gmail.com. Send us any questions or thoughts you have on this. But besides that, Drew, you have anything to close it out? Or,
no, I think we'll get the social media stuff coming quickly where you can maybe see some pictures.
Yep.
And get to know a little bit more on the picture side of what we're talking about.
Nice. We look forward to our next podcast. So Drew and Brenner here signing off.
Cheers, people.
Cheers.
Enjoy those beers. We'll talk to you next time.